provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frannis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about artificial intelligence in CW2324. Frannis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the most important artificial intelligence trends we've seen across LinkedIn over the past couple of weeks. And the big takeaway, really, as Thomas Allgaier shared, is this decisive shift in the AI agenda. We're moving past pure experimentation now towards, well, disciplined execution.
Yeah, it's really striking. And what's fascinating is it's not just sort of happening on its own, this shift. It's being actively pushed forward.
Yeah.
You've got clearer regulation coming in, purpose-built infrastructure being developed, and, you know, fresh capital flowing. So we're seeing AI agents, products, entire industry solutions moving from those early pilot phases into, well, scaled deployment, like you said, the focus now, squarely on measurable business impact.
Yeah.
And getting that governance piece right, it's getting very real, very fast.
A powerful shift indeed. So let's unpack that. Our first big theme, enterprise agents, moving from just a concept to delivering real measurable impact. We're talking AI agents going from like a good idea on paper to actually driving business value.
Absolutely. And early adopters are getting smarter about this. They're making a key distinction between these, you know, powerful AI agents and the older workflow automation. Daniel Palmer from Relevance AI pointed this out. Agents are great for those complex, multi-step, context-heavy tasks, but rule-based RPA still has its place for the narrower stuff. The best strategy uses both. You avoid trying to, you know, hammer a square peg into a round hole.
That distinction feels vital, doesn't it, for anyone actually deploying this stuff? So when companies get it right, what kind of impact are we seeing? Got any examples?
Oh, definitely. Marty Kaus has shared some results from Assembly AI's B2B support agent. They call it Sunny. And the gains were, well, remarkable. Sunny cut average response time by 97%.
97%. Wow.
Yeah. And it more than doubled the self-serve ticket resolution rate, up to 50%. So it shows, you know, when these agents are implemented well, they're not just theoretical. They deliver huge, measurable improvements. Efficiency, customer satisfaction. It's changing core functions.
Those are seriously impressive numbers. But with that kind of power, how are companies managing them? They can't just be deploy and forget, right? How do they keep improving them, avoid pitfalls?
That's a great point. And that's where things like Advith Chelakhani's work on AI agent analytics comes in. It gives you those detailed metrics, assign rate, response rate, resolution rate, stuff you absolutely need for ongoing optimization. Like if an agent isn't gathering the right details, you see it in the data and you can tweak its runbook.
Right. Data-driven improvement.
Exactly. And Alex Wang highlighted something pretty foundational, too, this new Model Context Protocol, or MCP. It's basically becoming a standard to replace older APIs for how agents work together. It's already powering stuff across GitHub, Google Maps, big platforms.
So it's the tech, the analytics. But is that the whole picture? What about the human element in managing these agents?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. Timothy Goble really hammered this point home. The need for closed-loop human feedback. He talks about human in the loop, ops in the loop, customer in the loop, all three. It's the only way agents can really reflect, adapt, improve over time. You avoid those stale responses or misaligned outcomes that kill trust.
Yeah, that feedback loop seems crucial to stop them going off the rails.
Without it, they could become ineffective pretty quickly.
And that brings up this whole idea of avoiding, you know, fake agent claims. I saw Lassie Rindom talking about that. He said true AI agents are flexible, interpretive. They need broad capabilities, deep testing, especially in low ambiguity situations. And he cautioned companies, didn't he? Like, if you struggled with basic rule-based RPA, maybe don't jump straight into scaling complex AI agents.
Sounds like sensible advice. Don't bite off more than you can chew. He's absolutely right to flag that. And we are seeing real examples emerge, though. Anna Kalin's work with Cortex, for instance. It's an open source agent, helps with pulling data, drafting documents, planning trips. It shows these customizable assistants are really happening. It's not just hype.
Okay, so the key is figuring out where true agentic AI adds that deep value, not just automating simple workflows. Andreas Welsh made that point too. And it's bigger than individual tasks, right? Thorsten L. was envisioning like a whole coordinated 24/7 AI workforce. That's a fundamentally different picture of work.
Exactly, a coordinated workforce. Helen Yu spoke really compellingly about this rise of agentic AI too, how it's revolutionizing workflows, enabling personalized interactions, and even agent-to-agent communication. Think about the implications for job roles, for company structures. It's huge. We're talking totally new operating models.
And the impact. Well, it brings us to that big societal question, doesn't it? Jobs. Linus Belyounis shared Amazon CEO Andy Jassy's take. Yeah, significant cuts likely in some white-collar jobs, but also exciting new roles being created. The message seems to be learn, adapt, innovate. Fast.
It has to be fast. Fred Hansen's mentioned global service models being totally redesigned in just 2 days. The pace is just incredible.
Okay, so as AI moves from labs to scaled execution, the whole ecosystem matures. And nowhere is that clearer than with regulation and governance. This isn't hypothetical anymore, is it? It's a real present challenge for businesses.
It absolutely is. And why the biggest things people are grappling with is the EU AI Act. Mm-hmm. Alexander Tulkinov pointed at a specific bit, Article 111.2, a sort of grandfathering clause that's widely misunderstood. It could really hike up compliance costs as if you're not ready.
Tricky details.
Yeah. And Renee Bonsack put out a guide for startups, basically saying these EU rules apply globally, so get on top of it early. And interestingly, early compliance, it can actually be a competitive edge.
A competitive edge from regulation. That's an interesting angle.
Right. And speaking of the act, Alvin Antony shared an AI-generated podcast that summarized the whole thing.
Huh. That's almost meta, isn't it? AI explaining AI regulation.
It really is. Shows what the tech can do. But beyond Europe, we're seeing some really innovative thinking, too. Abdullah Pathan talked about Saudi Arabia's draft global AI hub law. They're proposing this novel data embassy model. The idea is to allow cross-border data collaboration without the usual friction around data sovereignty. It's a bold attempt to balance innovation and national oversight. Could set a precedent.
A data embassy. That's creative. So while nations figure this out, what are companies doing internally, building that governance foundation?
Well, Charlotte Ledoux laid out a pretty comprehensive five-step model for data governance, specifically for this AI era. Covers data quality, AI ethics, bias mitigation, the whole package. Crucial stuff. But there are strong warnings, too. Howard Holton called the state of governance for agentic AI terrifyingly immature.
Terrifying. That's strong.
It is. He warned that pushing these systems out too fast without proper controls, risks, you know, market disruption, but maybe worse, destroying customer trust. Hard to win that back.
A really stark warning. Nicholas Babin even used the word tsunami for this wave of AI regulation. He urged leaders to see compliance not just as a burden, but like a design principle, a source of competitive advantage, echoing Bonsack's point, build it in early.
Definitely. And ethics remains front and center, especially in sensitive areas like healthcare. Sigrid Berge van Rooijen outlined 7 steps for ethical AI in healthcare, dealing with bias, privacy, keeping human oversight. And companies like Icometrix, Wim van Hecke there, they're actually sharing their practical approaches as these AI tools become more standard in care.
That's good to see. But what about trust in the wider industry? I saw Stephen Klein's comments, pretty provocative, criticizing parts of the Gen AI industry for, quote, dishonest practices, cheating on benchmarks, though he did commend Apple for taking a more ethical approach. That's a bold claim to make publicly.
It is, and it really just highlights this growing need for transparency and, well, authenticity, which ties into what Dan Van Rossum shared from a Harvard Business Review study. It found that even just the perception that a CEO's message was written by AI can damage credibility and trust with employees.
Wow, even the perception.
Yeah, the advice. Be transparent. Maybe keep AI for more routine updates, not critical leadership comms. It's subtle, but important for internal trust.
So stepping back, what's the bigger picture for, say, Europe's strategic position in all this?
Andreas Horn highlighted a European Commission report looking at Gen AI's impact. It flagged challenges to digital sovereignty, obviously, but also this urgent need to rethink digital skills. It's not just coding anymore. It's AI literacy. It's agent supervision.
Agent supervision. That's a new skill set right there.
Absolutely. And this connects to Alexander Tam's warning, a really profound one, about digital inbreeding. His concern is, what happens if AI just keeps learning from its own output without fresh human input? You risk losing nuance, depth, originality. He worries the internet could become a hall of mirrors echoing itself, which has implications for creativity, even democratic discourse.
A hall of mirrors. Yeah. That's a chilling thought.
It is. And Tony Moroni, speaking from Vivitech 2025, really stressed this point about owning and controlling intelligence, strategic autonomy, sovereignty in AI. It's a C-suite issue now, not just IT.
Definitely moved beyond the tech department.
For sure. And Ify Palerni summed it up pretty bluntly. Preparing for the EU AI Act now isn't optional. It's critical for survival in this AI cycle. Her take. The new KYC is KYAI. Know your AI.
K K-Y-A-I. I like that. Okay, so this drive for discipline execution, it's also fueling just incredible speed in new products, new features, which in turn demands our infrastructure keeps evolving, right? To support it all at scale, it feels like a flood of innovation aimed at real-world use.
It really does. Lisa Su at AMD announced a whole new portfolio of AI computing products, the Instinct MI350, MI400 series, the AMD Developer Cloud. And what this really shows is the industry shift towards heterogeneous compute stacks, basically mixing different processor types optimized specifically for AI training and inference. It's not one size fits all. Plus, AMD is deepening ties with OpenAI, Meta, the big players.
And Meta themselves, they're investing heavily, aren't they? Tino Kraus previewed new generative marketing tools from them, things like brand-consistent asset creation, dynamic video generation, turning static images into campaign videos. That could be huge for marketers.
Huge. Meanwhile, OpenAI drops O3 Pro. Ishwarya Srinivasan called it sharper, smarter, more accurate. Just shows that incredibly rapid product iteration. And that's alongside Apple weaving AI into devices, Mistral's open-source Magistral model, India's Kruttrim launching its agent Kruti. Martin Mahler noted that the O3 Pro launch specifically just reignited that whole debate about whether AI is actually thinking.
The pace is just relentless. But beyond the models and apps, what's happening underneath? The foundational infrastructure.
Kaylee McLean gave a great overview of Cisco's position here, really pushing their AI-ready infrastructure. She highlighted their unified platform, the deep network visibility with their AI assistant, massive throughput, 51.2 terabits per second for those huge AI workloads, and even built-in quantum-ready encryption. It's like a blueprint for enterprises that are serious about scaling AI properly.
So it sounds like it's not just about throwing more raw power at the problem then.
Exactly. Timothy Linger made a really sharp point. Algorithmic efficiency is starting to trump pure hardware scaling now, especially at the operational edge. The smartest folks aren't just asking, how do we buy more GPUs? They're asking, how do we do more with the resources we already have? Optimization is key.
Doing more with less, or at least more with what you've got. Smart.
Very smart.
And it's fascinating seeing how all these pieces fit together. Greg Kukiel laid out the kind of 2025 generative AI stack. You've got orchestration like LangChain, apps like Jasper, the models like GPT-4, all sitting on top of cloud and hardware from NVIDIA, Google Cloud. It's a complex ecosystem.
It really is. And there are crucial economic factors, too. Jason and Lemkin had some advice for companies. Don't get locked into current AI API pricing. He urged them to build business models around their own proprietary data, their unique workflows, because those API costs, they're widely expected to come down, deflate over time.
That's really important strategic advice. Don't build your house on rented land, essentially.
Pretty much. And it speaks volumes that Meta just committed, what was it, $14.8 billion to scale AI for a superintelligence lab.
$14.8 billion, wow.
Yeah. It just confirms there's still huge appetite for massive long-term investments in that foundational infrastructure. Big bets are still being placed.
Okay, let's pull back a bit for our final theme. Let's wrap up by reflecting on the broader societal impact of AI, and maybe most importantly, the human element. This feels like where the rubber really meets the road for our future.
Agreed. And there's some really thought-provoking points here. Pascal Bournette shared insights from an MIT study. Quite sobering, actually. It found that over-relying on tools like ChatGPT can actually hamper our own core cognitive skills, creativity, memory, critical thinking. They had students write essays with GPT-4.0, measured brain activity with EEG, activity dropped. And when the AI was taken away later, their performance just collapsed.
Collapsed. That's worrying.
It is. The key takeaway they stressed was hybrid workflows. Start with your own thinking, then use the AI tools to sharpen or refine it. Don't let it replace your initial cognitive effort.
Preserve our actual intelligence, as they put it. That really resonates. What about ethics and sensitive situations where human dignity is involved?
Bob Hudgens brought up this idea of a red light list for AI tasks, especially around emotionally charged interactions. He poses a really critical question. If the stakes are personal, permanent, or moral, does a machine belong in it? The goal is clear. Protect human dignity, preserve human judgment where it matters most.
That feels incredibly important, and it connects back to Alexander Tam's warning, doesn't it, about digital inbreeding. That risk of AI training on its own output, losing nuance, losing originality, creating that hall of mirrors, which, as he pointed out, could erode democratic discourse, too, if everything just becomes self-referential.
Exactly. It's a deep concern. And While AI promises all this efficiency, Montgomery Sengwin cited a Financial Times piece that challenged the idea that AI efficiency alone will fix our sort of innovation crisis.
Mm.
Global productivity growth has actually slowed down. And a lot of current AI boosts efficiency, sure, but not necessarily true creativity or breakthrough innovation. The argument is we need to focus more on discovery, originality, backing riskier, truly novel ideas.
That's a good counterpoint. But it's not all negative for the human touch, is it? Ramota Burchez argued that Gen AI isn't killing the human touch in customer experience. Her point was, it's actually enabling it at scale. Faster, more personalized, even predictive interactions that feel human because the AI handles the routine stuff. Augmenting, not replacing.
That's a much more optimistic take, yeah.
Yeah.
And Gerlin Tejmay describes something she called the gentle singularity. This idea that AI isn't arriving in some big bang, but it's quietly, constantly improving itself, reshaping how we work, learn, create, often in subtle ways we barely notice day to day. A continuous evolution.
A gentle singularity. I like that framing. So wrapping all this up, what's the bottom line for us navigating this landscape?
Well, Paul Storm put it pretty bluntly. If you're not staying ahead in AI, you're already behind.
No pressure then.
Huh, yeah. But really, the core message weaving through all these insights seems to be this constant imperative. Adapt, innovate, keep learning. And critically, focus on understanding where human intelligence, human judgment, human creativity, where that remains indispensable. That's where the real value lies at the intersection.
A constant state of learning and adapting, focusing on that human edge, seems like a good place to leave it. If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on ICT and tech, digital products and services, cloud and sustainability in green ICT.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the latest AI insights.
We hope these insights help you navigate the evolving world of AI. Until next time, we invite you to consider, how will you actively shape the intersection of human and artificial intelligence in your own work and world? Don't forget to subscribe.